Live from the World Wide Web and Contact Talk Radio, it's A Fresh Start with your host, Sally Felton, Life Coach, where you'll learn to make positive changes in your life one step at a time. We'll be talking about personal empowerment, life transitions, setting goals to organization and clutter, and so much more. Now helping you put the L back in living, I'm Sally Felton. Welcome, listeners. Sally Felton here with A Fresh Start. I have a wonderful guest with us today. His name is Dr. Harold N. Levinson. He's written the book, Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia, LD or ADD. He is a world-renowned psychiatrist and author. He is credited with bringing about the dramatic medical breakthrough in the understanding, diagnosis, and successful treatment of dyslexia in its many signal scrambling disturbances of the inner ear and its supercomputer cerebellum. I got that right.
You sure did. You just corrected the dyslexic slip.
I did. His website is www.dyslexiaonline.com, and dyslexia is spelled D-Y-S-L-E-X-I-A online.com. And he also gave me a 800 number, and it's 1-800-334-READ, R-E-A-D. Welcome, Dr. Levinson. I am truly honored to have you here.
And thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're going to learn so much because there is a lot out there, especially as school is now in session. We hear a lot about dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, I think most important, although everybody has heard about the severe cases of reading disorders where people can't read in reverse letters like B and D, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what dyslexia really is, and I'll go into that in greater detail. And everybody has heard of the severe cases of attention deficit disorder or where you can't concentrate or the severe hyperactivity where kids can't sit still and climbing the walls. That's just the tip of the iceberg of the number of individuals that suffer from that particular aspect of what I'm going to be discussing. So that the incidence is somewhere between 20% for the recognized cases and probably double if we include another 20% of the milder, compensated, and unrecognized cases. So that means that everybody listening will either have or know somebody in the immediate family who has this disorder once it's recognized. Now,
that's interesting. I'm sure I do.
Now, again, people think of just reversals for reading problems. Let me just give you an idea of what the dyslexia syndrome includes. Not only does it include ADHD, but individuals who have writing problems, spelling problems, difficulty with math and memory, difficulty with direction and time, psychosomatic symptoms, headaches, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, motion sickness, and it also includes a whole slew of balance and coordination problems, not just the severe klutzes that have trouble walking in a straight line or having trouble walking without falling and tripping, but even athletes can have coordination problems when it comes to writing. For example, Bruce Jenner, the famous athlete, couldn't read straight without needing a finger or marker. So his eye coordination was off when he read, and his writing coordination was like a two-year-old. It was severely impaired, but that wasn't tested in the Olympics. He could have also had a speech impediment, which is also related to the same syndrome I'm going to go into. And again, he could have been a great athlete, but the speech coordination is not measured in the Olympics. Now, so we've had all of that, and I discovered by accident that a whole slew of anxiety and phobic disorders are related to this. And I'll go into explaining how all this came about. Once my research, which now encompasses probably some 35,000 to 40,000 successfully treated children and adults, and even seniors, over the past 40 years, I came across the fact that underlying this group of disturbances, which I'll go into in greater detail, there's a simple inner ear problem. The inner ear acts like the fine tuner on a television set. It fine tunes all sensory signals coming into the brain and all motor responses and coordination and rhythmic responses, affecting every aspect of one's functioning, leaving the body. So that it's possible for one signal scrambling problem, just picture the TV analogy, where a signal scrambling a problem going to channel 1, 3, 5, 7, and 10 could cause severe visual difficulties in processing what you're looking at. And if the sound is also scrambled, you'll have difficulty listening to and concentrating and recognizing the sound correlated to the visual signals. So that if you have a little scrambling, you can have a little problem that's easily compensated. If you have a lot of scramble on any channel of information coming in, either on a television set or the radio that you're listening to, you can have a severe impairment. And if the fine-tuning impairment comes and goes, you can do better under certain circumstances and worse when you're tired, under difficulties where the inner ear isn't functioning well, such as seasonal difficulties, when you have an ear infection or a sinus infection, or when you're fatigued and don't have the concentration to compensate for the scrambling that's going on in your brain. And the unfortunate thing is that the individual can be very bright and gifted. He just doesn't, she doesn't understand what's going on. They just instinctively feel dumb because they know they should be able to do it, especially if they're bright. Everybody expects them to perform well. They just can't process information coming in. And they feel klutzy on the information going out. And everybody knows when you make a simple error, you drop something, you say the wrong word, you mispronounce it, you say, what an idiot I am. Or so that the reason the book was called Smart But Feeling Dumb is I came upon the recognition that the smarter you are with this problem, the more frustrated you get, the dumber you feel. And unless you give and provide bright people with a clear understanding of what the problem is, compliments do not help them. And if you can treat them successfully, they feel as smart as they really are. And the treatment, as I'll go into later, can be very successful, very, very rapid. Now, let me go into just the reading part of the syndrome so that you get an idea that it's not just difficulty understanding letters and words or just reversals, which are just an orientation problem. It's a memory problem. These individuals, for example, can remember a letter or a word or a sentence, but the longer they read, the more confused they get in terms of answering questions. It's because their memory is poor, and the more they have to remember to answer the questions, the worse they get in terms of the test scores, and people misunderstood that with a comprehension problem. It's a memory problem primarily that leads secondarily to difficulty answering proper questions. And thus,
that would be me.
And this is, would be a lot of people, which explains sometimes the speaking errors that people make, jumbling words, and many can be gifted. Now, that's just the memory aspect. As I said, you can have reversals, so there's a directional or orientation problem and to this problem, to the dyslexic disorder. Also, the most common symptom is eye-tracking problems. You lose your place when you're reading. You need a finger or marker to track so you don't skip words or skip lines. Otherwise, the words get blurry and double up and appear to wiggle on the page. And if you slow down the reading process, you can concentrate enough to control the eye coordination problem that characterizes this disorder. Also, many individuals with this problem look at the word was, for example. They don't only reverse it and say it's sore, but many can only see the W. They have a tunnel vision. Then they have to look at the next letter, and they see an A, and then they look at the next letter with their head, and they see an S, and they say, oh, yeah, W-A-S in their mind, and they say it's was. They have to, so to speak, manually integrate each letter to form the word in order to identify it. It doesn't happen on a reflex level. Many individuals have what's called ocular or eye perseveration or eye gluing. They look at the letter W, and they can't move from the letter W to the A to get to was. They have to blink to get the W-A-S. So there's a fluency difficulty as well. Many are sensitive to light, so that if there's too much light in the room, for example, it's all a blur. It's like you trying to read in bright sunlight without sunglasses.
Which I never knew that.
Nobody ever knew this. It's why tinted lenses can sometimes help individuals. So many a child or adult loves to read in the dark. And others looking at them say, what are you doing? You're going to hurt your eyes. And they're looking at them. They don't know why they're reading in the dark or in a dark environment. Some can only read in bright light, because otherwise it's too blurry for other reasons. And the light tends to illuminate the letters better. Others see the background better than the foreground. So they can only read when the print is black, when the background is black and the print is white. Yeah. Otherwise, the whole thing merges and it's a scramble. And they have great difficulty because foreground and background merge. Many others have difficulty concentrating on what they're looking at as well, so that without being able to concentrate and having all the other symptoms going on at the same time, it's a mess. They get very frustrated and they get turned off. I'm just mentioning some of the difficulties, including the fact that many individuals will see the lines they read tilting, going up. So what do? They have what I call a gyroscopic problem. They tilt their head in the direction that they see the words on the line going up or down, and so they have head tilting. And many have difficulty focusing properly front and back, so you see them shifting their heads up and down or reading overly close to the page as if they were extremely, extremely nearsighted, when in fact they're not. But if they don't read close and their eyes get too far from the letters and words, they lose them because they have an eye-tracking problem, not just from left to right, but from front to back. So that I'm just giving you an idea of just the basic symptoms, and I haven't mentioned them all yet. Now, some have to compensate for what they have. And so, as I said, they tilt their head. They need a finger or marker to read. Some can actually hear the words they're looking at in their head, so they don't recognize the letters fully until they hear them. So some have to read out loud, or some develop what I call like an auditory eidetic imagery, where they learn to listen to what they see. They hear it, and that registers. Some have to trace the letters and the words with their eyes so that the tracing is recognized. And some artists I've talked to read because they recognize the letters and the words only by the ups and downs of the line of words they're looking at in the sentence. They don't see the details. So this is the complexity of just the reading problem. And the same complexity affects the writing and the spelling, the math, memory, speech. For example, speech, stuttering and stammering, or articulation and enunciation problems. Difficulty remembering the word and the thought are not just age-related in terms of when you get to be 60 and 70 and 80, there are many children who have difficulty with this. And many have difficulty with processing what they hear quick enough. And so they have delayed processing, and they're always saying what as if they're partially deaf and always come up with normal or acute hearing tests. And many, for example, can't carry on a conversation in a restaurant or a crowded room because the background noise interferes with the foreground conversation. They can't listen to both, and the whole thing becomes a jumble, and many become anxious, and they have to leave. And stage fright, many individuals, for example, will have to perform and read or perform in front of an audience. They get a quick visual overload. They forget. They get anxious by the overload. They're not aware of that. And the overload and the anxiety makes them or encourages them to forget the words or the content or the rhythm, and they're always afraid they're going to make a mistake. And so until they're coached and properly, and they properly understand it or they're properly treated, they develop anxiety symptoms. And many...
Can I ask you a question about something?
Yes.
What about if you read a book and you have a hard time remembering what you've just read, and even more so when it comes to take the test, regurgitating all those memory facts?
This is what an aspect of dyslexia or learning disabilities affecting reading is. These are different aspects of the same problem. Different individuals will have more difficulty with one mechanism than another.
Mm-hmm.
Some may have only one mechanism impairing their problem, which is then more easily to compensate. And others will have, for example, as you say, not memory for words, not memory difficulties for sentences, but for paragraphs and pages, paragraphs, and then books. And again, the memory can be compensated only so far, but at some point or other, it will show up as a symptom. So that it may not show up for reading, for example, if memory is the only problem, may not show up in elementary school, may first show up in high school when you have to read more and more, or in college when you get overloaded and overburdened with a great deal of memory-related reading material. And one aspect or another will be a problem.
I remember that so vividly in the fifth grade, having to go to summer school over and over and over. And it was because my retrieval process wasn't as quick as everybody else in the class.
And the same can happen in effect math. For example...
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. My math skills are horrendous.
Right. So here you see a correlation that dyslexia is not just a reading problem. It also affects math. It has a different name called dyscalculia. Nobody before me significantly tied together all aspects of the syndrome. It's as if before my research, diabetes was thought to be a severe comatose disorder. And nobody recognized you don't have to be comatose to be diabetic. And you don't have to have bouts of coma episodically or dizziness. But it's a wide range of symptoms that can affect individuals who have diabetes. And different individuals with this syndrome will have different degrees and variations of symptoms. The same is true with dyslexia syndrome. And I'll go into the ADD syndrome once I get through with math. So that memory can affect math to a great degree. So the individuals, for example, look at numbers and they can't add in their head. They need to count with their fingers. Then many get to the multiplication tables and they can't remember the damn tables. It drives them crazy. Now, I have a math professor who can't still remember the multiplication tables in his head and then needs his fingers to count. Has great concepts, but poor memory. I have individuals that have difficulty with memory and concepts in math, and I have the reverse. I have individuals who have a good memory for individual numbers and can remember the calculations, but they can't string together a sequence of thoughts required to solve an algebraic problem or visualize a geometric problem or conceptualize a more difficult calculus problem. So that there are tremendous variations in every individual symptom that characterizes this disorder. And unless you read Smart But Feeling Dumb, you won't understand the tremendous variations that can affect every symptom. So that, and then to make matters worse, without recognizing this, individuals are called by different names and different disorders. For example, if you have a reading problem, you call it dyslexic. If the reading problem isn't that great, you call learning disabled. If you have a writing problem, you call dysgraphic. If you have a math problem, you call dyscalculic. If you have coordination problems, which almost everyone has with this problem, then you call dyspraxic. And if you can't write properly or the writing looks like a drunk walking up or down or crooked, then you call dysgraphic. Now, 95% of individuals with dyslexia have concentration, distractibility, and activity problems, typical of everyone with ADD. And the reverse, individuals with ADD or ADHD, 95% will have some difficulty with reading, writing, spelling, math, memory, speech, balance, coordination. Now, 96% of cases I examine, This goes into thousands. I recognized that some difficulty with balance and coordination, and I was the first to recognize that there's a problem within the inner ear and supercomputer called the cerebellum, or the highest brain of an animal is the reflex brain of man. And this brain is a huge part, huge chunk of brain right over the neck. It's called the lower brain of man. And it's a huge complex processor that can communicate with others the way on a primitive basis, the way animals can communicate. And it processes every sensory input, visual, auditory, touch, knowing where your body parts are in space called proprioception, and even smell process. And it controls all reflex coordination activities. And everyone knows the tremendous coordination that different animals have. Some can fly, some can run, some can do unbelievable, quote, gymnastics. So that this is in us as well, but we have a higher brain called the thinking brain. The lower brain sends every signal to the higher brain that the boss needs to act on. Otherwise, it takes care of everything on its own, the way a piano player learns to do everything on a reflex basis. Things that have to be done rapidly and quickly can only be done by the lower brain because the higher brain is too slow. It has to think about everything. So if you had to play the piano thinking about which finger you're going to use, or if you had to talk, you had to think consciously of every word you were going to use before you said it, it would take forever to get through with the conversation. So the lower brain, the cerebellum, has to handle at some point or other almost all our reflex activity on a lower level. Everybody before me thought the thinking brain, the cortex, was the problem, but they never could find anything there. I recognized that the only thing you find are inner ear problems, or cerebellar problems, or lower brain problems. And I eventually reasoned that the lower brain acts as a fine tuner to the brain. That's where the problem is that nobody else could find. And as I said before, it fine-tunes every other signal coming in and going out of the brain. So as a result, if the processor of your brain is gifted, you can have 100 different symptoms because the signals going to it are impaired, and yet be a genius. Just like you can be a genius watching a television set with 10 channels are impaired, and you can't answer questions asked about the information coming in those channels. It's as if the television and the fine tuner was the lower brain and the genius was watching and listening to it. And so you can still be a genius and have something difficulty going on with the fine tuner. Nobody else could understand this particular aspect. No other variations. If you had a thinking brain problem, one for every symptom, and there are hundreds of symptoms that characterize individuals, if you go into them in great detail, you'd have to have an IQ of minus 1,000, and you couldn't get better. Many dyslexic individuals or individuals with ADD do get better. Now, let me get to a treatment I discovered. What I found was that if you treat the inner ear with medications that were formerly used to improve balance and coordination, the so-called motion sickness medications like Dramamine and whatnot, not only do you get improvements in balance and coordination, but to my dismay, you'll not only get improvements in eye coordination when you write, but writing coordination when you're writing, and speech coordination when you're spelling. Your memory can improve. And by and large, all the symptoms that characterize this particular syndrome, hundreds of different symptoms can improve, not only the ones I expected, but about 99% of the ones I didn't expect. And having been a psychoanalyst by training before I became neurologically expertise in this disorder, I had tried to treat many phobic individuals unsuccessfully via talking therapy and analysis. By accident, I discovered that individuals I was treating for reading and concentration problems using the method I described suddenly told me they were no longer afraid of heights or elevators or escalators. They were no longer afraid of driving a car, things of that nature, or buses or planes. And suddenly I recognized that there's a motion fault, there's a motion mechanism responsible in underlying every motion phobia. And there's a phobia for every form of motion, moving elevators, escalators, trains, planes, buses. Not an accident. Also, fears of heights were turned out to be underlyingly due to a balance mechanism. So that if your balance is off, you're going to be afraid of heights. And if your visual perception is off and your balance is off, looking down from a height is going to be devastating. And if you're going to be off the ground and not centered properly and not weighted properly, and you, because your sense of gravity and weight isn't anchoring you properly, many individuals with problems with the air feel like they're floating anyway. You put them in a plane or something flying, they have no sense of being grounded, and they panic. And so on and on, a whole slew of phobias were elucidated and clarified by me, and I wrote another book on phobias and another book on ADD, all related to inner ear mechanisms, all of which responded favorably to inner ear improving medications. Now, as I said before, 95% of individuals with reading and learning problems also have concentration, distractibility, and activity problems. So that, and everybody by now knows, but didn't many years ago, that concentration-enhancing medications can improve concentration, distractibility, and activity. What is less known is the fact that many stimulant medications are also inner ear-improving medications. And by simple analogy, everybody knows that if you're fatigued, your balance and coordination is going to be poor. So that's why even athletes that are gifted have to sleep well at night. If they come in tired, they're going to perform poorly. Concentration improves balance and coordination. It improves the inner ear, which is why concentration and inner ear-related symptoms related to concentration, distractibility, and activity level are also improved using concentration-enhancing medications. Now, a whole treatment methodology was developed by me over a period of time so that by combining proper inner ear-enhancing antihistamines, nutrients, and stimulants, I can get much better results using smaller doses of most of the medications and get not only improvements in reading or in concentration alone, but in the whole slew of symptoms that can affect people, including phobias and even mood disorders. There's a whole slew of individuals who are moody and irritable and don't know why. And many of these symptoms disappear, including bedwetting. There are a whole slew of psychosomatic symptoms blamed on other things. And by treating these individuals for their reading problems or their concentration problems only, we got improvements, as I said, not only unexpectedly for phobias, but the dizziness disappeared. We didn't even know they had a ringing in their ears disappeared. Unexplained stomach aches. Their little children who have been vomiting and have episodic vomiting. It's called cyclical vomiting. And I discovered that cyclical vomiting syndrome is related to the inner ear as well, including individuals that vomit very easily. Their reflexes for swallowing and coughing and breathing and digesting things can be off because of the same inner ear cerebellar problem. And by stabilizing the system, you get improvements in a wide range of symptoms that nobody before ever thought were part and parcel of this disorder. In fact, I sometimes surprise patients when I get a history, and the history is very, very thorough. I ask them, did you have trouble blowing your nose when you were younger? And they said, what? Yes. How did you know to ask that? Because, surprisingly, individuals I treated for reading and coordination problems suddenly began swallowing better, or suddenly were able to blow their nose when before, instead of blowing out, they sucked in. They reversed it. Many individuals I treat before they ever start school because they have coordination problems. They're delayed walkers, delayed talkers, very clumsy and clumsy, off balance, tilting to one side. And when you treat them for these disorders, which are balance and coordination, it turns out if the treatment is successful, and it's successful over 85% of the time, they start school and they don't have any learning or concentration problems until the medication is stopped. When the medication is stopped, if it's stopped too early, suddenly a major number of these individuals suddenly start to have reading and writing and spelling and math and memory problems. So that if you treat patients early, you can actually prevent many of the symptoms that will arise later on in age when they start going to school. And if you treat them early in school, you can prevent major difficulties that will arise later on when the school work gets harder and harder because the amount of processing and memory that you have to do sharply increases over time.
It certainly does.
So that, again, we now get into adult dyslexia and adult ADHD. Many individuals thought that you outgrow these many signs and symptoms when you get older. What I found is if you properly treat individuals with the medications I just suggested, 70% or 80% will no longer need medications after 3 to 4 years. The symptoms improve even after you stop the medication. So that although many individuals are frightened of long-term treatment, what I have found is the opposite is true. The longer you treat them, the less they need the medication statistically. There will be exceptions. But in most individuals, the longer you treat them, the less symptoms they have, the less frustration they have, the less anxiety they have, the less failure they have, the less they will be driven to drop out of school, drop out of work, drop out of marriages and social relationships. And if you can avoid all the fallout, the secondary emotional and behavioral fallout, you ensure that a majority of treated individuals avoid the major pitfalls that lead others with this problem, the drug addiction, alcoholism, social failures, marital failures, and whatnot. Now, as I said, many of the symptoms go into adulthood, so that every adult with this problem was a child who had this problem before. Now, sometimes the symptoms improve with age and compensate until an adult may have an ear infection, a sinus infection, a whiplash injury, a concussion, some susceptibility to mononucleosis or Lyme's disease, and then the symptoms can re-intensify again. So that the symptoms over time get better unless other processes occur during the aging process or during time unrelated to the aging process come into play and change the equation, and thus additional treatment and changing treatment are necessary. So that now we go into adults with dyslexia and adults with ADHD. Now they're no longer in school, the majority, but now they're faced with greater challenges. They have to work, and very often it's not forgiving. And if they make mistakes, memory errors, or slips of the mind, forgetting, slips of the tongue, talking too much, or saying the wrong thing, or not being able to listen properly, or concentrate properly, or not being able to process what other people are saying fast enough and accurately enough, not being able to answer appropriately, not being able to attend lectures, not being able to concentrate on what people are saying, to impulsively get up and start to walk or impulsively say things that are inappropriate or untimed in a lecture or to an individual they're talking to. Their career and the job they have can be threatened and their performance seriously diminished and the prospects for advances also proportionally diminished. So it can affect their whole career, and many are forced to drop out of one job and go into another. They either get bored, or they're fired, or the stress becomes too much because it takes too much effort to process what's going on, however mild the job is, and they drift from job to job and job to job. Many then get married or have serious relationships, children, and they can't cope. It's too much of an overload, too much pressure, too much difficulty relating on a steady basis without their minds drifting off, without their interests drifting off, without them getting bored, about many can't stay in one place too long. They're restless by nature, and then they're stuck. And they not only develop claustrophobic symptoms, but they have to drift. And they drift not just from place to place, job to job, but person to person, and child to child, in terms of their interest span. So many then are overwhelmed with an inability to function up to par, and they are then driven to drugs and alcoholism and many other situations. As I said, many are impulsive by nature. This is part of the ADHD syndrome, and it's part of the whole dyslexia syndrome. Not everybody will have it, but those that do can have it to a severe degree. Now, just think of somebody who's impulsive. They impulsively eat too much. They talk too much. They take too much. I mean, they may be going in the station, may shop too much, they may spend too much. And they have, but some of them may take too much from a store. Shopaholics, and then you have individuals that just take things. I mean, they could be wealthy. They just can't stop it. It's an impulsive act, and they're stuck with it. And they have great difficulty understanding and coping with it. Many drift into crime because they can't sustain things too long. So they have to do quick things to make a buck, so to speak. And the reason they don't learn by being caught and being admonished at a young age or an older age is the desire, the tremendous instinctive desire to do something quickly is so great that it overrides whatever learning they may have. The reasoning is suspended by the impulsivity, the instinctive need to do something and get a quick fix. Many of them become gamblers. They just instinctively need the rush. And the rush very often is an adrenaline rush. They need something that helps them focus. Now, it's sort of like many of them become racing car drivers, or they become drivers who race in a dangerous way, and many are susceptible to accidents. Some are susceptible to accidents because their coordination is poor, their perception is poor when they're driving. Many are panic-stricken in traffic because they see an overload. They can't handle too much traffic coming and going. Many see the oncoming traffic crossing into their lanes. Their perception sort of doesn't function in parallel lines when that type of functioning is required. They see parallel lines crossing. That's why many are afraid of highway driving. The faster they go, the more coordination they need and the greater perception they need. And many, for example, can't have somebody in the car talking to them. They get disorganized by somebody else in the car. So some can't stand the radio. They get very, very irritated, nervous, and they're difficult to be with. Many individuals from the car to the home come in, and the wives get very angry with them. Let's say it's a man, because the wives are talking to them, and they're just ignoring the wife, for example. And the wife takes it personally. The wife doesn't know that they're doing the same thing at work, which is why their job is threatened. They have difficulty processing what is told to them, what they hear. And they keep saying, what? What? And then they may know what was said, or it may take a minute. Sometimes it takes an hour later for some bright individuals to know what somebody told them an hour before. Wives take it personally. It leads, they feel neglected, and it leads to argument. And without knowing what the problem is, they have difficulty coping with it in an appropriate way. One patient was married and was very, very interesting. He was a very rapid processor. He had other problems, but he could perceive what somebody was saying before he finished the sentence, or she finished the sentence. After two words, he knew what the sentence was going to be in terms of what his wife was saying, and he continually interrupted her. She, on the other hand, was a slow processor and needed time to process everything that was said. So you had two individuals mistimed with one another in terms of communication. And it drove them crazy. The husband was impatient with the wife because she talked so slowly and responded to what he said so slowly. She, on the other hand, was furious with him for interrupting and finishing a sentence, which was so slow that even average people would finish just to get on with the conversation. So you have these mismanaged functions that individuals have, and nobody knows what the underlying physiological problems are that can now be successfully treated, certainly understood, but they don't know it. They blame it on disinterest. They blame it on psychological factors. They go into treatment, and many times the treatment can't recognize the underlying problem. They treat it superficially. And that's like treating a severe diabetic superficially. You might be able to get a little improvement, but the main diabetic condition remains unsuccessfully diminished. Not diminished, but it remains a problem. And so, too, you have to understand that many, many individuals with this disorder and this syndrome, that I call it, can have major problems unrelated to just the typical reading or the typical writing or the typical spelling problem, but in communication. Many children, for example, have difficulty looking at somebody when they're talking. And this was thought or misthought often to reflect an autistic child or an autistic individual. But sometimes individuals are just shy, and they're embarrassed to look at somebody. But more often than not, they have difficulty looking at the face and listening to what the person is saying at the same time. They have difficulty processing two sets of functioning at the same time. So they can either look at the person and not listen, or they cannot look at the person and listen to what's said. They can't do both successfully. Otherwise, you've got to mishmash.
It's amazing.
It is, when you fully understand it. But it takes many, many years and thousands of patients for them all to convey the information underlying their very problem. All I had to do was be interested enough to listen to them and then tie it all together. And by observing what they told me, and especially observing the disappearance of these many and varied symptoms, and recognizing the connection between all these many, many symptoms, I was able to obtain a portrait of this disorder, which is not even three-dimensional but four-dimensional in nature. It involves all dimensions in space and time in many ways. Because there's some
Levinson,
individuals...
Where can people get your book?
Well,
Smart Feeling Dumb.
Well, Amazon has it. If they call my office, they can get it. Barnes & Noble's online has it. As I said, there's a free toll-free number, 1-800-334-READ, they can contact. Or look up dyslexiaonline.com, and many of the things that I've said are in books and other books that I've written. I've written about 8-9 other books and many, many scientific papers. But it's very hard to go into all of it. I can talk for hours if I were to go into just a few of the symptoms in greater detail than even the reading problem, and I can't.
Well, you might have noticed that I purposely have not taken a commercial break because you were on such a roll and had so much information. I did not want to interrupt you at all. So I've loved this conversation. It has been a wealth of information. And listeners, again, the name of the book is Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia, LD, or ADD. The name of his website is dyslexiaonline.com. And again, Dr. Levinson has given us his toll-free number, 1-800-334-READ, READ. Dr. Levinson, thank you so much for being on my show. I have learned more than I thought I would.
Thank you for having me. Thank you even more for not interrupting me.
No, I didn't want to interrupt you. You were on a roll, and this information needs to be heard. It really does. And I did not want to interrupt you. You were wonderful.
I can tell you it's been life-saving for thousands of my patients, And it will be for many, many others who can go from pillar to post and receive 10, 20 different diagnoses.
Exactly.
And not know what to do and not know and not improve and think it's their fault very often.
So, listeners, feel smart. Buy the book, Smart, But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia. We all have it in some form, so let's be more understanding of each other and help each other down the road. This is Sally Felton with A Fresh Start.